in pages 17 to 19 of its opinion, it acknowledged that there was evidence on both sides of the factual dispute, that there was evidence that the school, through a counselor and a teacher, reported to a parent of...
Didn't acknowledge admissible evidence.
Your Honor, the court called the evidence no credible evidence and actually considered it, and instead of dismissing it as hearsay, dismissed it as not credible and made a forbidden credibility determination in doing so.
But we can affirm based on anything, you know, any reason supported by the record. And if it is, I actually think it's probably double hearsay. Isn't that a reason to affirm?
No, Your Honor. It's not a reason to affirm. First, to begin with, there's no challenge. There's been no challenge to the evidentiary ruling itself, and the court considered the evidence and considered the evidence to be not credible. And so I think Your Honors are dealing with an abuse of discretion standard. And I think the
Could
reason...
Could it be a harmless error?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Could it be a harmless error in that it would have been inadmissible in any respect?
No, Your Honor, I don't think it was harmless error. And I think the reason he made a credibility determination is because he understood that this evidence was going to come in one way or another as a party admission, as the report of a person's medical condition, that this was credible evidence given by a non-party with no interest at all in the outcome of the litigation. And in fact, what happened in discounting Jacob's new searching at school, that's actually in keeping with the practice of the school in this case. Another of the critical incidents, the critical load-bearing facts, is this incident in November 2017 where the student warns the administration, this other student is going to punch my teeth in. He's going to physically attack me. Please do something about it. The school takes a step but doesn't stop the beating from happening.
I just want to step back. What is the standard here for the Rehabilitation Act and ADA claims?
Yeah, it's a gross misjudgment.
Now, I wanted to ask about that. Nobody briefed or talked about AJT. And AJT would seem to apply in the school context. It's a Supreme Court case. And it said that our gross misjudgment standard is wrong. And so it's deliberate indifference. But none of the parties alerted us to that. And so I wanted to give you a chance to respond to that.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that makes it easier for us, not harder. The evidence...
Well, does it apply?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Does it apply?
Yes, Your Honor, it does apply. The normal...
Now we get into a serious line of Supreme Court cases and Eighth Circuit cases about when does a supervening decision govern.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that...
You know, you didn't cite the case. You don't get into anything along these lines. You just give us a lot of work to do and then throw out all what we win.
Your Honor, we apologize for any shortcoming in the briefing, but we think that the gross misjudgment standard is going to be higher than a deliberate indifference standard. And the facts in the case here establish very clearly that the school understood that if they had evidence that a student had an intention to do self-harm to themselves or to others, that they were to do something about it, report it to the family.
It seems like the claims mix and match a little bit too much for my taste, which is the Rehabilitation Act and the ADA are really about did they respond appropriately to the bullying. And that's where the... that's where deliberate indifference comes in. But then the wrongful death, that's where you start talking about the evidence about the searching the noose and all of that. Am I right about that? Because I'm having a hard time following your argument.
I think the load-bearing fact in both sets of claims is, with regards to the new search, is the new search itself, Your Honor, and not report. Just like it was the appropriate decision for Counselor Malm and Teacher Ben Heim to make the report to the one remaining alive student, that judgment should have been taken before Jacob passed. And that's a gross misjudgment, and it's also a breach of a fiduciary.
But which theory goes with which facts? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Because it seems like you're, again, even in that answer, you're mixing and matching. How is the suicide relevant to the education? I still can't figure that out. But I understand it's relevant to the wrongful death. So I'm trying to figure out. You sort of have to figure out what the theories are, and I'm looking for help here.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that the theory on the statutory side is that when they had evidence of his suicide preparations, that the response that they should have taken was to inform the family.
What is the evidence in the record that the school had the technological ability to know about the search?
Your Honor, I think the evidence in the record is that they didn't have the technological ability to know the search, and that's not how the school came to know about the news Googling at the school, Your Honor. I think that's not...
What evidence are you now talking about?
Your Honor, we are here with regards to the suicide preparations that were taking place at school, we're relying on Kelly Johnson's testimony. That's what we're relying on.
Kelly Johnson's testimony addressed what the school had the technological capability to do?
No, Your Honor. That's not what...
That's what you were just talking about.
Ms. Johnson's testimony and her declaration indicate that the counselor of the and the teacher reached out to her because they believed that there was a suicide pact between two friends at the school.
That. I mean, it's...
It's evidence, Your Honor. It's evidence, and the reason that the school reported it to that family is because they had a duty to do that, and they understood that if they had evidence, if they had some indication that somebody was taking a step to harm themselves or others...
They didn't talk about that, and the mom didn't talk about that.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the judge weighs the evidence that's on both sides on pages 17 and 19 of his opinion. And at the end of that weighing says there's nothing to corroborate Kelly Johnson's testimony. That's what the district court judge said. And in our mind, that at summary judgment, is there evidence?
But if it's hearsay and she was very uncertain and inconsistent.
Your Honor, there is a very minor inconsistency about how this, how did the counselor come to learn about the noose Googling? What was the nature of the noose Googling? Was it on a school computer? Was it on a personal device? Those facts were unclear. But, Your Honor, this is a mom hearing from the school.
Well, I've read this stuff, and I completely disagree with this last answer.
Yeah. Yes,
so
Your
move
Honor.
On.
Yes, Your Honor.
By the way, I can't find – we have two orders that are critical here, right? A summary judgment order and then an earlier order on the education things, which is not in your addendum. A clear violation of the rules of appellate procedure, which maybe don't matter in the D.C. Circuit, but they matter a lot to us.
Your Honor, if there's an absence in the appendix, I apologize. That was certainly mistaken. I believe that the summary judgment decision is in the early 400s of the
doesn't get into the bullying evidentiary questions. The extent to which the school district responded to every bullying incident,
Your Honor. Well, are the nature of our claims regarding the broader ignoring of the bullying? You know, we highlighted several incidents that we feel demonstrated a pattern. We didn't enumerate every single thing.
Didn't give
happened.
Us the district court response to that. You know, this is not playing by the FRAP rules is not sanctionable. except the sanction is you get no credibility. Your brief and argument get no credibility. Also, your questions presented don't begin to address the arguments in the argument session, which is another violation of FRAP. Yeah. Enough said.
Yeah, and Your Honor, I would just urge that whatever shortcomings you find in the brief, that you keep an open mind to the arguments that are being made. And the arguments that are being made is that here's a school district, here's a school that had a chance to intervene. In the police report, the event that immediately precedes his death is new school going. That's what precedes the act of suicide.
Is that true, though? Because my understanding, the evidence is sort of undisputed, that he had a run-in with his girlfriend or a disagreement with his girlfriend, and that he also had a disagreement, I believe, with his stepfather, which came in between the new schooling and the suicide.
And his mother.
Your Honor, I'm specifically talking about the news Googling that's mentioned in the police report, and that news Googling took place on a device at the home.
What Judge Strauss is addressing is highly relevant to causation and foreseeability.
Your Honor, the news Googling that we're talking about is a few days before that, and that took place at school. And if the family had known
doesn't get into causation.
Your Honor,
under the Minnesota cases, as I understand them, it doesn't satisfy the foreseeability requirements, which are quite stringent in Minnesota.
Your Honor, if they knew about the news Googling and told the family about the new schooling, the family would have done something.
Who's they?
If the school told the family before Jacob's death what they told
Scott. Janitor?
I'm sorry? If the school, through counselor mom, told Jacob's friend's mother after his death that they had been Googling about nooses.
Your best Minnesota case for that proposition?
Your Honor, it's simple causation, and they're not refuting it. If they knew about it, they're not refuting that they should have told about it. Their defense is evidentiary. They're saying that that we didn't know about it, or the evidence that they knew about it wasn't there. Thank you, Your Honor. I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Mr. Walsper.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Michael Waldsberger, and I represent the defendants in this matter. It is always an honor to appear before this court. I do want to first address the questions about AGT and the Osseo School District. We believe plaintiff has waived any argument on the application of that case. The U.S. Supreme Court decided...
You're looking down. I can't follow, frankly.
I'm sorry. Yes, the U.S. Supreme Court decided AGT in... June 12 of 2025, plaintiffs submitted the reply brief more than two full months later on August 13 of 2025 and never raised the issue. We submitted our briefs before AGT was filed.
Don't we have to follow Supreme Court precedent, though? I mean, the general rule is that when there's an intervening Supreme Court decision, it applies to anything that's still on direct appeal. That's the general rule. I get it. They didn't argue it. But it would be very strange for us to write an opinion basically ignoring what the Supreme Court said 6 months ago in one of our cases that went up to the court.
Yes, I think that is a fair point. And I also think that AGT does not produce a different result. And you can reach that conclusion based on the district court's findings in this case and statements. And I'll give you a couple by way
of
example. Well, findings is perhaps the wrong terminology, but the statement of what the evidence was and what the evidence was not. So let me give you an example, Your Honor. In regard to peer misconduct, the district court stated the record is devoid of any evidence that the district tolerated, let alone encouraged bullying. Rather, the evidence shows the district took peer incidents involving JLE seriously and took reasonable steps to prevent future occurrences. The district court further stated the district responded to peer incidents in a timely and appropriate way. That's what the evidence shows, the undisputed evidence shows. And we know from that then that there's no deliberate indifference, because that would be our standard under AGT. The U.S. Supreme Court said you're to apply what the normal standard is, And we're looking at a damages case, not an injunction case here. And so in order to obtain damages, you have to be able to show intentional discrimination. To show intentional discrimination, you have to show deliberate indifference. And in order to show deliberate indifference, you have to show a strong likelihood, the U.S. Supreme Court said, that the challenged action would result in a violation of federally protected rights.
How, in your view, how has this been litigated, the Rehabilitation Act and ADA claims? Has it been litigated as the suicide, which is what I'm hearing this morning, or has it been litigated as the bullying, which is what I understand the briefs to say? And maybe there's a relationship between the two, but I'm just trying to figure out what the issue is.
Yeah, to be frank, it's been all over the board. If you read the complaint in this case, it is hard to figure out how we got to where we are now, based on the theories in the complaint, based on the arguments that were made in the initial motion to dismiss by plaintiff, and where we're at now. It is difficult to track the shifting arguments. Right now, the most recent arguments we have are the ones that are addressed in the brief, that it's the bullying is going to the ADA claims, that there's some allegation that this bullying occurred because of disability, although the record is devoid of any evidence that would establish that. And along those same lines, back to AGT, I just want to read one more statement from the district court that JLE's teachers were notified of Jacob's accommodations, or excuse me, JLE's accommodations, and reminded them when plaintiff expressed concern. Plaintiff does not cite, and the court cannot find any evidence in the record that any teacher intended to deny JLE an accommodation. That again shows there is no deliberate indifference in regard to not applying accommodations or implementing accommodations in the IEP. And we can go through that. This court can easily go through that analysis based on the district court statements and the undisputed evidence of record. And I do want to just mention briefly that the federal district court, the Honorable Judge Doty, really went to an unusual step here of addressing the fact that plaintiff's brief was rife with inaccuracies and overstatements and contained inaccurate citations and exaggerated claims. Plaintiffs never addressed that. Instead, what did they do? They recite many of those same inaccurate claims and citations in their briefs to this court. I'd like to now just briefly address the internet search for nooses. As the court is well aware, that is inadmissible hearsay, multiple layers of hearsay. Moreover,
what is now?
We're talking about the internet search and the affidavit from Ms. Johnson about the Google search for nooses, that her affidavit is based upon multiple layers of hearsay. She had no personal knowledge of the students conducting that search. JLE's best friend, who allegedly conducted the search with them, said it didn't happen. He did not conduct the search with JLE. He conducted one on his own. He recalls that, but he did not conduct one with JLE.
Counsel suggests that's the statement of a party opponent and therefore is excluded from hearsay. What's your response to that?
Yeah, that's frankly disingenuous. The record is undisputed and crystal clear that Malm is not a district employee or agent. The record is clear that she is an employee of TSA, an outside private counseling service that gets medical funding. It's no district funding, no overlap between them at all. This is simply what's referred to in Minnesota as
Her backing and filling in the deposition sure makes it sound like she was straightening up and flying in the for the district.
Well, again, I'm not quite sure what you mean by that.
I'm talking about if a jury listened to her and had to weigh her credibility.
Well, I'm relying on the statements that she made. I have no basis for concluding that she's not credible, and nor did the court.
I have another question along these lines that nobody talks about. What discovery was pursued after Ms. Johnson came forward with her recollections and accusation regarding who the students were, who it might have been reported to, and so forth?
Yes, we did. First of all,
either side.
Yes, Your Honor. It's an excellent question. First of all, plaintiffs had to get an extension to go ahead and even get that evidence in to take further depositions. But further depositions were taken, and they showed that, again, Malm, not a district employee, said it didn't happen. JLE's best friend, SK, said it did not happen. and no district employee.
But that isn't what I'm asking about. I'm asking about who were the other students that it could have been, and who was the person that could have been reported to.
Well, we have no evidence that it was reported to any district employee. That we know.
No, they say what Johnson says is evidence.
Right. Again, okay. It's inadmissible.
Well, that's the evidence I'm talking about.
Yes, but they don't say that we know that Malm, they say that Johnson says that Malm tells her this. Malm is not a district employee. There's no evidence that Malm told any district employee. There's no evidence that the district had any capacity.
That's not what she said. She said other students knew about it and reported it.
I'm gathering
from both of you this morning, there was no attempt to run that down in discovery.
Yeah, I think we certainly.
Am I right? Yes or no?
No. The problem is that this came after the end of the discovery period.
So what? It might have come on the first day of trial.
I do feel like we worked as hard as we could to obtain.
There was an extension of discovery when this came up, right?
Yes, to allow.
What I'm hearing is nobody bothered to do what seems to me the obvious looking for, you know, a needle in a haystack would do. There are a lot of students. There are a lot of employees. It could have been a janitor. Who knows? And nobody, at least nobody, did anything that's in the record to run that down.
We did verify, Your Honor, that the district does not, A, have any capability to review searches of students. So we know we didn't have the technology
that
to
isn't
that.
The same as students reporting to somebody,
yeah,
to an employee.
An unknown student reports is the inconsistent claim that Johnson makes, that an unknown student reports to having seen this search be done. She doesn't know who the student is. We don't know who the student is. SK, the person who allegedly did the search, we follow up with him, and he says it didn't happen.
All you're doing is trying to explain why this wasn't done. I'm just trying to confirm it wasn't done.
I respectfully disagree. We ask SK, who's supposed to be the one who does the search, and he said it never happened.
Well, then he later said it did.
No, he said he conducted a search, but he said he never did with JLE. He himself contemplated suicide. SK did, but
you know,
he never did with JLE.
I've got all this stuff sitting here that's contradicted by mother or somebody. SK flip flopped on this, on his recollection and etc. And so there weren't that many students in the school. Go find out who it could have been.
There are thousands of students in the school.
Pardon?
There are thousands of students in the school. And SK never flip-flopped in his deposition. He never flip-flopped in his deposition. He was very clear. I asked him at least three times. He said he did not recall searching.
I read the deposition. I'm not talking about the deposition. It's contradicted by either Malm or Ms. Johnson, somebody.
By Ms. Johnson's multiple layers of hearsay? I don't think that contradicts his firsthand knowledge.
I'm talking about the follow-up. I think Mother followed up with him years later. And he said, yes, we did do that. Didn't Mother testify to that?
She provided an affidavit to that effect or testified to that effect. I can't recall which.
Oh, my goodness.
But
well, we just certainly can ignore that because it isn't friendly.
It's multiple layers of hearsay, and we have the firsthand statement.
That's not multiple layers of hearsay.
She's making statements based upon what her son allegedly said to her, her son said something different in his deposition.
She's talking about what she did after the deposition. Ultimately confronted him, and he said, well, yeah, we did do that, or I did that. It's unclear whether Jacob was involved or not. We can talk about multiple layers of hearsay, but I don't. It doesn't resolve. It doesn't satisfy the unknown here. Now, whether the unknown is sufficient to defeat summary judgment, of course, is the ultimate question.
Yes, and I think going back to the standard in Minnesota, The court cases, as you have noted, are very stringent.
I didn't note any. I asked him for a cite, and I didn't get one. So you give me the cites I should care about.
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. I will happily do that. I'm going to give you a couple because the Supreme Court in Donaldson versus YMCA establishes this narrow exception of a special relationship. And the Minnesota Supreme Court says a special relationship giving rise to a duty to protect is usually found only on the part of common carriers, innkeepers, possessors of land who hold it open to the public, and persons who have custody of another person in which that person is deprived of normal opportunities for self-protection. That's not the situation with a student.
What year was that?
The Donaldson case, Your Honor, the citation for it is 539 Northwest 2nd, 789, 1995. Yes, it was briefed, Your Honor.
Suppose, though, that this happened at school. Suppose that somebody walked in and saw that, a student was tying a noose around a bathroom stall and about to commit suicide, and the teacher, rather than intervening or telling somebody about it, walked right out of the bathroom and let the kid commit suicide. Wouldn't that kind of fall? I know that's not this case, but wouldn't that kind of fall under the Donaldson case that you're not in custody, but they do have sort of a parents patriae relationship with a student who is in session at the time?
Yeah, I believe if we had those facts, we would have a different outcome here, just based upon the common law duty to protect.
It was on Sunday. The suicide was on Sunday.
Well, that nobody knew about it. We had no basis for foreseeing it. It was on a...
No. The foreseeability, if it exists, if it's there, would have come sooner.
Correct. We're saying we didn't have a duty because we could not foresee this based upon what we knew. Even the old mother couldn't foresee this, but and she had four more facts.
You said cases. Are you referring to Jesperson?
Yeah, Jesperson is the next case. I would say, even though it's an unpublished case, the quality of the factual analysis there really lays directly with this case here. And in Jesperson, you have this middle school student who gets failing grades in every class except for Phi Ed. He goes to talk to the teacher. The teacher is very harsh with him, tells him you're going nowhere fast. The student also claims he's being bullied, although by individuals who are not necessarily students of the school, and claims that the principal takes no action. And then the very next day, the student commits suicide in his home, but in his note, he says the reason why he's committing suicide is because he's going nowhere fast.
You said Jefferson. I'm looking at the case titled Jesperson. Is that the case you're talking about?
Yes, Jesperson, Your Honor. Jesperson versus Noka Hennepin, ISD number 11.
Okay. How much, real quickly, how much work is being done by the fact that this happened at home, the suicide itself happened at home versus at the school? I mean, how significant is that to the duty analysis and the foreseeability?
That's highly significant because in order to be able to have a duty, the courts recognize that we have to be able to address it, to prevent it. There's nothing this district could have done to prevent this conduct at issue here, as tragic as it was.
Now you better give me a Minnesota case for that. There has to be an opportunity to prevent it on the day it occurs.
Yes, I will, Your Honor. Let me just look here really quickly so I can see it. So I have the exact citation for you. Well, here it is, Donaldson, and I'm going to read the quote for you. To reach the conclusion that a special relationship exists, it must be assumed that the harm to be prevented by the defendant is the one that the defendant is in a position to protect against and should be expected to protect against. You cannot protect against a suicide that occurs in the home. And that is Donaldson 539 Northwest 2nd 792 is the pinpoint site, and that is in our brief, Your Honor.
Okay, time's up.
Thank you. I appreciate the time before this court. Thank you.
For rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I just want to start with Malm, the counselor. When Malm is relaying this information to Ms. Johnson, she's not relaying counselor information. She's relaying the information from the school about the noose googling. She was unclear.
What difference does that make?
Your Honor,
if it's third party hearsay, it's different than party hearsay.
Well, Your Honor, in sharing it, she's acting as the school. She's doing it
That. It's ridiculous, but it's absurd.
Your Honor, she's there, and I think the school's expectation would be that she shares if there's a self-harm issue there, that she's sharing it with the students. And so why would the school bring her this information but to share it with the family? And
the school didn't bring her the information.
Ms. Johnson's testimony is that Counselor Malm told her that the administration had learned that Skylar and Jacob had been researching nooses at school.
She didn't say the administration learned.
That the school did. The school did. Yes, Your Honor, that's absolutely right. I'm sorry. I'm being
Students reported.
Yes, Your Honor.
Reported this.
And
without any indication of to whom they reported it or when and why.
Well, Your Honor, I think that's a really extreme fact, that coming from a mom of a disinterested student, disinterested party herself, that a jury, a fact finder, is going to believe Ms. Johnson rather than Ms. Malm or Ms. Benheim. And Your Honor pointed out some of the evidence that's on our side. That's not from Ms. Johnson. That's from Skylar himself. And to the extent that there's a shortcoming in the brief or the appendix, Your Honor, I apologize. I take full responsibility for that. But there was a misjudgment here. There was a wrong that happened here. There's evidence on both sides. And in that circumstance, a fact finder should decide this case. Thank you, Your Honors.